I'm DeMelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. Simon Tam is one of the few, if any, rock musicians to have received a major award from the American Bar Association. As a lead member of the Portland-originated band, The Slants, Simon had to fight a case all the way to the Supreme Court in order to get the band name trademarked. In 2017, Tam won his case against the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. That office initially refused the trademark, saying the name, The Slants, was disparaging to people of Asian descent. Simon later wrote about the experience in Slanted, how an Asian American troublemaker took on the Supreme Court. Now, the Portland Chinatown Museum is featuring The Slants in an exhibit called What's Worth the Fight? The History of The Slants. The exhibit runs until May 11th. With me to talk about The Slants, the exhibit, the band, and more is musician and author and self-proclaimed troublemaker, Simon Tam. Welcome to Stage and Studio on Arts Watch, Simon.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It's been years since I've seen you. I don't know how long ago it was, but I know you moved away before the pandemic, I think.
Yeah, I left Portland in 2017, so it's been a minute for sure.
It's been a long minute. Well, I'm glad to talk with you now, but where are you based? What do you call home now?
Right now, I call Cincinnati, Ohio home.
Wow, what made you want to go to Cincinnati?
It's kind of a long story, but I think a lot of it had to do in 2019 after I released my memoir. I was living in Nashville at the time, driving throughout the country on book tours and speaking tours. And every time I drove through Cincinnati, I just kept thinking, this is such a beautiful place. I really liked it. It was really affordable and diverse. And so I decided to just move over here.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah, I always like to see where people travel to. How long did you live in Portland? Your family is here still, right, in Portland?
So I lived in Portland for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
My sister's still there, but I grew up in San Diego, so most of my family is actually in California.
I see. Okay. Yeah, because I know at one point you had a connection, or you started with, I think, your dad, a Taiwanese-American restaurant here. I mean, that was way before you moved, but I remember that, and it was always so cool because I don't know a ton of Taiwanese Americans here in Portland because I'm one.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I was born in Taiwan, but so I always want to ask about people's Taiwanese origin stories.
Yes. So it was actually my mom who's Taiwanese. My dad's Cantonese, but together we did open a wonton shop with my sister who runs Either Or used to run Either Or and Tanglewood Beverage Company. And so,
wow. Yeah.
And speaking of Taiwan, actually, I'm in the midst of getting ready to move overseas because I want to move to Taiwan later this fall.
Ah, that's big news for me. That's big news. Where in Taiwan?
Right now, we're looking at Beitou or Danshui. Like,
just that's nice. Yeah, the Beitou's hot springs. I remember that.
Yeah, why not live by a mountain and ocean at the same
time? I know. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. I haven't been there in a long time, but what made you want to settle there?
Well, my partner and I, just after spending a few years here in the States doing our respective arts, I think we realized we wanted to be in a place that we felt better represented our values. And it's a culture that really takes care of its own people. Plus, I want to be at the epicenter of the very best food on earth. So Taiwan is definitely the place to be for that.
It does. It does have the best food, I have to say. It really does. And the best produce, too. I know a lot of people who want to leave for the next 4 years. So I didn't know if that was the case with you.
The plan was already in motion before any kind of changes politically. But I think it's a very happy coincidence for us.
Yeah.
Just to absolutely be sure. And I know no country's perfect. And of course, there's like this kind of looming possible threat with China, but we figure let's just go ahead and go on this grand adventure while we can, you know?
And the cost of living is so much better too, as well as the food. So, yeah. And I think the healthcare, everything. So I hear what you're saying about taking care of its own. So yeah, kudos to you. So I want to get on your Facebook page if you're on that and just see more pictures when you get there. So I know that the museum is going to do a reception in February. And right now it's sort of up in the air if you'll be able to be there.
That's correct. But I think we could say that the local Portland-based guys, they're going to be performing acoustically at the Chinatown Parade. And I think some of the other things are still in the works. We might be planning a full band concert at some point this spring. And so I would be glad to join the band for that and celebrate and see the exhibit, as well as see all of our old friends in the Portland area.
And let's talk about the band, how it originated. It was back in 2006, right? You co-founded the band?
Yeah, I just had this idea of starting an all Asian American dance rock band, something to kind of pay homage to the 80s, where there was just this big migration of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders coming in at the time. And so we grew up listening to new wave synth pop music like Duran Duran and The Cure. And I thought, why not take that sound and fuse it with more modern rock and roll? And after a while, we were able to get a lineup together and start performing as the Slants.
Well, let's talk about the name. What was the thought process in creation of the name, the Slants?
Honestly, it started with a conversation I had with friends outside of our community. I started asking, hey, what's the thing you think all Asian people have in common? And they would oftentimes say, slanted eyes, which, you know, I thought was really interesting because growing up, I heard the insults, I was bullied, I was beaten up for these things. And I always associated my eyes and my facial features with fear, with embarrassment. And I knew, you know, because Asian kids are the most bullied demographic in American schools, that I wasn't alone in this. So I thought, what if we could take it, just flip it upside down and throw it back in the faces of our oppressors and say, you know what, we're going to use this as a badge of pride instead. And so that's what we decided to do. It's kind of like a very punk rock thing to do, I guess you could say.
I like your explanation. It's reappropriating it and taking the sting out of it. So I appreciate that. I wonder then, 3 years later, you tried to trademark the name, the Slants. What was your first reaction to when the trademark was denied?
I was told that, you know, we were being rejected from our attorney, and he said it was because the government said our name was disparaging to persons of Asian descent. And I honestly thought it was a practical joke. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we've just spent years working with our community all throughout the U.S. Like, we are in every single Asian American news site, magazine, TV show, working with fighting against anti-Asian, like, racism and doing all these things for our community. So, and no one had ever complained about our name. So I was like, where did they even get this idea from? It turned out they were using this weird entry in urbandictionary.com. So I was like, you're telling me like the federal government with all of its resources is using a wiki joke website to deny us our rights? And he's like, yeah. And so we just thought they didn't get it. We thought, okay, if we could just show them how our community is supporting us, bring letters of support, show our connection to the community, that should be enough. It turned out we were wrong. And over the next 7 years, we brought tens of thousands of Asian Americans, letters of support, executive directors of numerous Asian organizations. We got dictionary experts and academic scholars and incarceration camp survivors, all writing these things in our favor. And the government said that's not good enough because of urbandictionary.com.
Yeah, I wonder if there were any Asians in the office, you know, at the trademark office, you know, who could talk to them and go, you know, I don't know. It just seems like there was such a disconnect with trying to do like the right thing or the politically correct thing, and it went against you.
They're being offended on our behalf. And actually, the Oregon Commission of Asian Pacific Islander Affairs, that board wrote to the trademark office asking like, hey, what folks from our community did you have involved in this decision? And they wrote back and they said, well, nobody, but we have a lot of Asians that work in this building. And their effect was like, hey, we got Kevin down. He's got the cubicle down the corner. We know him and he would be unhappy. We didn't bother talking to them, but it was.
Did you ask Kevin?
Yeah, they didn't talk to a single organization about the issue. And when we brought them, we said, hey, 147 Asian American organizations signed on to support us, and they couldn't find a single one that was offended by our work. We knew that it didn't matter how much evidence we brought to the table. They thought they knew our community better than us.
Wow. That's stunning. It really is. Did you ever think as a band to change like the S into a Z maybe at the end? Did you ever try anything? Because I'm thinking like, would this have happened to some, I'm thinking like NWA. Would that have happened to NWA?
NWA had the registered trademark, as did many other groups.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is that like, when we asked them like, why the slants? Like, why are you picking on us? Because we found almost 800 other trademarks with slant in it. So we're like, if this is actually an inherent racial slur, like you claim it is, how come you gave it to everyone else? And that's when the government came back and said, it's because you're too Asian to use the mark.
It was
precisely because of our Asianness. Because they're like, if you look at theslants.com, it's pictures of Asian people all over it.
Mm.
And see, in their minds, they genuinely thought that if people saw the words the slants and they saw us, they wouldn't help but think racial slur instead of any other definition in the dictionary. But that's just a more convoluted way of saying anyone can have this name except Asian people.
And that's racist. That was totally racist.
Yeah. And we went through and you could actually find every single slur you could think of for an Asian person was a registered trademark, except when Asian people applied, they were all denied too. And so it turned out this law that was supposed to be protecting us was actually being used to racially discriminate against our community.
Wow. Well, I know the story, obviously. I was sort of following it through the years, you know, of the band. But when I hear you talk about it, it just sort of brings everything back to that time. And it took you until 2017. That's a long time from when you trademarked. It's almost like 8 years, right?
Yeah.
To reach the Supreme Court. You kept trying. You kept trying to get the name trademarked. What was that like to appear before the Supreme Court for you?
I mean, it felt really surreal. For one, like I couldn't actually say anything. It's not like they asked me to testify or anything like that. And in many ways, I realized how disempowering this whole journey felt. Like, because like I'm at the Supreme Court, and at that point, we're using the First Amendment to fight this thing constitutionally. And I'm thinking, I'm like, I'm fighting for freedom of speech in America's highest court. And in that room, I can't say anything at all.
Wow.
And it didn't matter. If they were actually using straight up misinformation, mischaracterizing words from our own community and calling me and the work of my band racist, even though on the other side, we were being championed. We were called champions of the Asian American community by the White House, right across, right down the street. And so it's like, get it together. Like, you hired us. Like, the federal government asked us to do outreach after the suicide of Lieutenant Denny Chen to try and mend some of the wounds and to try and help American soldiers understand how to work with our community. Time and time again, they asked us to help them with one cause or another. But when we ask for a simple thing, our basic rights, our dignity to be recognized, they took that away from us.
And how did the justices vote? Like, what was the verdict?
They voted unanimously in our favor.
Wow.
So it was...
It was not divided at all.
It wasn't divided. It was a little bit shocking to me, honestly, being in that room. But what a vindication, you know, and to see that every single one across ideological lines agreed that we should have the dignity as a community to choose what's right and not to have someone in the government decide that for us.
I wonder if how it would have fared in the current climate, you know, how your case would have gone.
I'm not sure if they would have even picked up the case, but you know, who knows? I'm constantly surprised and baffled by the court. All we can do is hang on. And I think as a community, we realize that we can't leave it to the whims of somebody else to decide our fates and to decide our rights. like we should be able to use the legal system as one of the many channels, like if and when we need it. But the reality is that change needs to come way before that. We need to be getting into positions of power, an elected office. We need to be involved with school boards and our communities at every level to ensure that these kinds of things don't happen.
Well, I went to the exhibit last Sunday to see, you know, the exhibit at the Chinatown Museum. And it was lovely to see a lot of personal items there. They had the drum set. They had the actual, like, it looked like a band, you know, was about to perform, right, on stage. And it was really, and there was a documentary about your tour before the pandemic. I think it was like 2017, or maybe it was a farewell tour or something.
Well, that was actually our Taiwan tour.
It was the Taiwan tour.
Yeah, we toured throughout the island, and we ended up performing in Kenting for the Spring Scream Festival, which is no longer around, but at the time it was one of the biggest festivals in Asia. So just a lot of fun and a really good excuse to just eat our way across the island.
Are all the band members the original band members?
No. So we've had over a dozen people come and go over the years. It's hard to keep a band together. Life comes up. You know, we all had different obligations. Some people started families. So it just happens that way. But I think we're all connected by this shared love of the music.
Well, I was wondering what the most important thing about being the Slants that shaped you personally, Simon, as an artist. What was the most important thing about that for you?
That's a good question.
I hope so. It's a hard question because you're a writer as well, always been an activist, but music is at the heart of you too. So I'm just wondering, how important was this band to you?
I mean, for me, the band was probably the most defining thing in my life other than my own family. But I think I realized, you know, after we stopped touring and I had some time to really process everything, like the decade and a half that I had in the band, I realized that the idea of the Slants probably was more important than the band itself. Like, we didn't become known for our music as much as we wanted to as artists. We didn't, you know, become known just for our activism. It was kind of this weird blend. Like, people saw in the band what they needed to get from it, whether it's this idea that you should be able to fight for yourselves, or maybe for some people, like, yeah, some Asian American rockers challenging the music industry and the systems that we find ourselves in. And so I realized that, you know, because we had so many band members come and go, fans, it didn't matter to them. They just liked the idea that we were out there staying in and fighting for what we thought was ours.
The Slants and you personally have been on so many national shows besides NPR, Conan O'Brien, The Daily Show. You know, had the trademark office approved your name right away and you didn't have the Supreme Court fight, do you think it would have become as well known as it did?
It's hard to say. We were getting a lot of great traction, and including from NPR and a bunch of music magazines prior to the name ever being an issue at all. And in fact, it was because we were gaining prominent recognition that's what kind of attracted the eyes of the government to the band and put us under scrutiny. And once we were in the legal fight, I had to dedicate so much of my time, energy, and resources to it that as a result, the band kind of had to suffer. We had to take breaks from touring all the time because I had to save up money and pay legal fees and do other things like that. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what it would have looked like had I been able to fully dedicate everything to just the music side of things. And so it's one of those kind of what if scenarios. But I think either way, it became what it did. And I don't wish to only be known for being the guy who went to the Supreme Court, in many ways, if it gives people meaning, if it inspires them to kind of take up their own fight or to pick up a guitar, then I'll be glad for that.
It's not a bad legacy to go to the Supreme Court. That's not bad at all, you know, but it's almost like there's this alternate dimension where the trademark thing didn't happen and there was another road that could have gone, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel proud. I'm in very good company with many folks who fought for our community at the Supreme Court. And it was always over issues that shouldn't have been an issue to begin with. And like, we were just trying to live our own respective lives. And it was really the government's oppression of our community that forced us to the table. And, you know, when I think about cases like Fred Korematsu and other folks who just bravely stood up saying like, hey, I just want my basic human dignity. And it was just like that simple desire that kind of pushed us all the way up to the top.
Yeah. I mean, there are things that are, to quote the exhibit, worth the fight, right?
Yeah.
So what are you doing now? Are you still writing? What's your bread and butter right now?
So these days I spend most of my time in the nonprofit world. I actually work on communications for a nonprofit. Ironically, that's challenging the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. But this time it's over patent laws to try and break up the monopolies that pharmaceuticals have, because I want to provide health care and access to the general public. And so that's kind of like what I spend a lot of my day doing. And then my nights and weekends is volunteering with the Slants Foundation, which is a nonprofit that we started about 5 or 6 years ago with other members of the band and other folks who are, you know, Asian American artists, activists. And through that organization, we serve maybe 500 artists across North America. And we both provide trainings and funding and research for them. But we are also in the midst of doing other things like filming television shows and filming movies to try and highlight the next generation of troublemakers.
I'm glad you're doing the foundation. I think that's such worthy work. And I'm glad to hear that you're working with newer artists, let's say. What advice do you give them, especially emerging Asian American artists? What advice do you give them?
Yeah, so we really focus on kind of three main buckets. The first is obviously the actual art itself, helping them to improve their craft, whether it's songwriting or performance and all the things associated with that, including kind of the business end of things to help them become more sustainable. The other is also their connection to their community. We're all passionate about these various social causes, but nobody teaches us how to create social change or even to work with organizations that we happen to be passionate about. And so what we find is like when we first encounter artists, a lot of times their method is like, oh, I'll post on social media or I'll write a song about something. But they don't think like, hey, what if I talk to people who are actually in the fight? And how can I use my platform to work with them in a meaningful way? And in doing so, build a community. So we're really teaching them how to work with nonprofits to create civic engagement and change. And then the third is building a mutual community of support. You know, so often we find that because the resources for artists in this country are so scarce that we sometimes feel like it's competition. Like, oh, this other person is competing for this grant or for this opportunity to be on this stage. And we don't want it to be a competition. We want it to be collaboration where we're constantly helping each other out. And so we're building this network where these artists can frequently collaborate with each other and figure out how they can be resources rather than rivals.
How is the foundation, the Slants Foundation, funded?
It's a lot of it is through
your grants,
my speaking engagements, our band's royalties, so all the money that actually funds this nonprofit. And then we have a variety of folks who donate to the band, and many times it's other artists or performers who've been pretty successful who wanting to give back to the community. So we've been very fortunate in that regard, and I think this year, now that we have a pretty good track record of doing this work, we're going to be applying for, you know, the traditional stuff like foundations, grants, and that sort of thing.
But your website, the Slants website, does have a link to where you can donate for the foundation as well. So I'll put that up on the page. I think it's important work, and I like that you connect art to community and to activism and community engagement and social justice. So those things, I think, I don't know, it just seems like it helps not just yourself to do your art, but also helps make the world just a tiny bit better, you know? And that's all we can ask for, is to try to do that.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And on the flip side, we're also trying to teach nonprofits how to engage with the artists in their own backyard. Because like, artists can be a great resource for these organizations as well. And so we're really proud to stand with a number of folks. We helped, you know, register tons of people to vote. We passed legislation across multiple states to mandate the inclusion of AAPI history. And that's through this network of artists working with community organizations.
That's so good to hear. That's really great work. Is the band still performing then? It sounds like it is.
That's pretty rare for us to perform these days. I mean, we're spread across like 4 different states when you count all the different band members. And so we really only get together for like charity events or very special occasions. You know, I think the last time we played was sometime last year to celebrate the release of our final record.
Oh, wow.
We're really retired these days and focused on our various efforts or the foundation.
Well, I just, you know, just going through your history as a band, you've had a couple of final farewell concerts and then you get back together for a little bit, you know, so I don't know. I think there's something there. I think.
Well, the first one was we were just retiring from touring and like people interpreted that to mean something very different. And then, you know, after the record, we're like, okay, I think we're done. We're all getting too old for this.
Well, you know, you're not done till you're done. So I don't know. I think it's all fluid. Why put an ending to anything? What?
I love performing. I love connecting with folks using our music. And I really love my fellow band members. They are truly my family. But, you know, I think like any family, sometimes distance is a good thing for us.
You need a break.
Yeah.
You need a break. Well, we didn't talk about you being a bassist, but how did you get involved in becoming a bass player?
You know, it was kind of by accident in many ways. When I was growing up, my cousins were actually starting to pick up the piano and learning instruments. And I went to the store with my mom and I was like, I want to play guitar. And they actually handed me a ukulele because they're like, you're 6 years old. You can't have a guitar yet. It's too many strings.
And it's too big.
Yeah. They're like, let's start on this little thing. And then when I really wanted to take it seriously, that was at age 10, we went back to the music store and I was like, oh, that thing also has 4 strings and it was a bass guitar. So I was like, let's just do that. Plus, I was like, there's just way too many guitarists in the world and drummers are really annoying. So I think I'll pick the bass.
I think bass players really, I don't know. I've known quite a few bass players and they seem to be very steady people because you have to be. It's almost like the heartbeat. It is the heartbeat of the band.
It is. Yeah. To me, it is the perfect intersection of harmony and groove and rhythm. And I honestly don't like being in the spotlight. I kind of like being the person in the back, but it was actually through the band's work that I kind of got thrusted into this different position. But I love just kind of being that silent person that kind of serves as a conductor to pull it all together.
Yeah, I see you have a lot. Are they all bass guitars? The window's too small for me to see, but are those all bass guitars in your studio?
No, it's a good number of them are bass guitars.
Regular guitars?
Yeah. Acoustic and electric guitars, so.
Do you still have your ukulele?
No, I don't know what happened to it. My parents might have it somewhere, but I know I don't even have my first bass guitar that was sold to a classmate of mine many years ago.
So I don't know what your personal history is, but do you have kids now?
I don't. No.
If you ever do, would you pass on the ukulele training to them?
Well, my partner and I have chosen not to have children. I think if we did, you could be very well assured they would be totally those art kids.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. I don't know. Well, it's been so great to catch up with you and talk with you. Is there anything else you want to say about the band, about just anything about working with the Slants, the foundation? Any last words?
I think, you know, we're always looking for folks who want to stir up trouble, who are passionate about the, you know, intersection of arts and activism. So if anybody is interested in supporting the work of the Slants Foundation, they can go to theslants.org. And for me, this is my passion. And I think I really see the nonprofit work as kind of the band's legacy more than the case that took us to the Supreme Court or our music or anything else. Because we really live through this next generation of artists. And that is my pride and joy.
Well, I hope people do go see the exhibit at the Chinatown Museum. And I love that you are a Chinatown dance band. And I think that's pretty unique. Certainly was here in Portland. And it was always great to hear you guys play here and also just to get your music. And it always made you happy. It really did. So kudos to you. It's been so great to talk with you. And I have a lot of admiration for your art and activism and being able to be a voice that speaks up for Asian Americans in this country and being able to just win that fight, because so many people dream about being able to win something like that. And a lot of times Asian Americans are just like, well, we don't want to make waves I don't have that energy to do that. And you did. You did. That was an accomplishment. And that's something to be really proud of. It really is.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's always great catching up, and come visit me in Taiwan when I'm there.
I'm going to check you out. Definitely. It's been years, decades actually. So you can find out more about Simon Tam at simontam.org and The Slants at theslants.com. And I have those links in this interview at stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Simon Tam, great to talk with you. Keep up the good fight.
All right, thank you so much.
That's it for Stage and Studio on Arts Watch. Till the next conversation, I'm Dimela Roberts.